of Jonah's eighth grade year that I became the shortest person in the household. And ever since then, there has been a conspiracy. So we redid a kitchen and went shelves all the way to the top. And guess where they put all the stuff that I want? All the way at the top. Go to Jonah's house, and he's getting set for his new bride to move in, and we're hanging a TV. And we're trying to hang the TV, and my big, tall, long-armed son is reaching high, and he said, "Dad, can you grab this?" And he's stretched out about as high as he can get, and I'm about 8 inches a foot short. And I said, "Jonah, I can't reach that." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, I forgot. You're a little person." Which is true. When I'm out in public, I feel like I'm taller than 20% of the people around, and all of them are kids. But it's not a whole lot of fun being the shortest one in my household sometimes. I was reading my Bible about a month and a half ago. I spend about 45 minutes every morning with a Bible in my lap, and I read a chunk of the Old Testament and a chunk of the Gospels and a chunk of the Epistles and then a few Psalms. And I'll spend some time praying and meditating over that before I begin my day there in the office. And I came across this story. I was reading through Jeremiah, and Jeremiah is not a book that I preach from very often. About half of Jeremiah is written to a bunch of nations that God is going to punish. The other half of Jeremiah is this pretty sad state of Israel. And so it's not one that we preach from very often. But I'm reading through about the middle of it, and I come across this character. And in the midst of that reading, I thought to myself, I've probably read Jeremiah hundreds of times, and never once has this fella jumped out. And this fella's name is Ebed-Melech. Now, if you want to say it different, that's fine. You're wrong, and I'm right. But that's the way I'm going to say it all morning. In fact, I may just call him Ebed. We may just call him Em. I don't know. We'll figure something out. But I came across this guy who kind of appears in two chapters when Jeremiah is in the most trouble. Now, what we often do when we talk about the book of Jeremiah is we talk about Jeremiah being the weeping prophet who never has any converts. I mean, he just preaches and preaches and preaches, and no one seems to care, and no one seems to listen. And there's this little brief hiatus from that in the middle of this book where at least old Ebed is going to listen to Jeremiah. And he appears to be Jeremiah's one friend. But yet he's this little tiny character in this broad narrative of the Bible. And I thought, he is to Jeremiah what I am to my family. He's the little guy in the family. Okay, let's be honest. Most of us are little ones. In the broad story of God, we're not David's. We're not Peter's. We're not Paul's. We're not Mary Magdalene. We're not Mary the mother of Jesus. We're not Deborah the great judge. We are these little characters living in our little town, doing our little thing. And there may be moments where we look at the story of God and saying, I'm not a very big part of it. Well, I want you to hear Ebed's story. Because Ebed is going to probably think he's not a very important cog in the machine that God calls his people to be. But yet there's some serious lessons to learn from this little story. Let's talk about what's going on, kind of set the stage. Jeremiah's story, we've already said, is sad. It is the time when Israel is the most rebellious. You have King Zedekiah, and King Zedekiah is, to put it mildly, not a very nice guy. Not only is he not a very nice guy, but he has no desire to follow God. His idea of following God is to cast his lots before whatever God will give him the most. And he doesn't think of the God of Israel as one who's given him very much. Not only is he kind of an idol worshiper, he's actually in the pocket of King Nebuchadnezzar. Now, King Nebuchadnezzar, he is the king of Babylon. And if you know your Old Testament toward the end of the story, Babylon is going to be the ruling nation for a long period of time. And in the midst of them being the ruling nation, they are going to conquer Jerusalem. And that is on the horizon. And so Nebuchadnezzar has got kind of Zedekiah in his pocket, and Zedekiah is kind of kissing his ring to keep favor. And yet he's not ever once going to start depending on God. And Jeremiah enters. And so Jeremiah comes into the story, and he basically says to King Zedekiah and to all of Jerusalem, quit doing what Babylon says. Quit listening to Nebuchadnezzar. Quit following their gods. Quit worshiping the things that don't really matter, because before you know it, they're going to come and they're going to wipe us out. But nobody's willing to listen, including King Zedekiah, who thinks he's pretty buddy-buddy with Nebuchadnezzar. And so Jeremiah keeps on preaching that God is going to send Babylon to judge, and if Jerusalem doesn't get their life straight, God is going to punish them. And then there's a little skirmish that starts. The skirmish that starts is between Egypt, so that is south of them in a sense, and Babylon, that is kind of north of them. And those two big nations, who are much mightier than Jerusalem is at that point in time, they have got this little battle going on. And King Zedekiah says, this is great, because Jeremiah, you keep saying Babylon's going to come whoop us, and they're not coming to whoop us. I mean, they're busy out here in the desert with this little skirmish going on with Egypt. We are just fine. God must not be that mad at us, so let's keep on doing what we're doing. Problem solved. Babylon is gone. We'll do whatever we want to do. And Jeremiah is going to look right at King Zedekiah and then the others there in Jerusalem and say, Egypt is eventually going to run. And when Egypt runs, guess what Babylon is going to do on their way home? And the answer is, Egypt is going to run back home, and Babylon is going to come back to go home, and on their way home, they're going to get to Jerusalem, and they're going to wipe out Jerusalem. And so Zedekiah keeps being told by Jeremiah, we've got to either follow God, or you might as well get out of town. And Zedekiah is angry, and so he gets the captain of his guard, who accuses Jeremiah of desertion. And so Jeremiah, who really hasn't run yet, he's been told by God to do it, but he hasn't done it yet. Jeremiah is told by God, you need to tell everybody, get out of Jerusalem, because Jerusalem is going to be wiped out. He doesn't go yet, but Zedekiah says, how dare you even say that? And so he beats Jeremiah to a pulp, and he throws him in prison. Eventually, Zedekiah brings him back to the palace, and he asks an interesting phrase. He says, is there any word from the Lord? Okay, I find that one statement to be pretty ironic, that King Zedekiah, for most of his life, and he finally gets right with God at the very end of the story. We could talk about that at another time, but for most of Zedekiah's life, he's been all about the idols that he's going to worship that are everybody else's gods except for his. And yet he brings Jeremiah in, and Jeremiah's been sitting in the jail cell, and he brings Jeremiah in, and he says, is there any word from the Lord? And to paraphrase Jeremiah, this is what he says. Here's the word, Babylon is coming, and there is no hope. Okay, can you see why we don't preach from Jeremiah very often? Babylon is coming, and there's no hope. So King Zedekiah in chapter 38 of Jeremiah, he's madder than ever. And instead of putting him in prison, he's going to put him on display. And so I almost imagine this almost like a zoo kind of image, is this little cage that's going on there in the middle of the courtyard of the palace, and Jeremiah is locked up there, and he keeps preaching from his little jail cell that's in the middle of the courtyard, flee the city or else. So the officials, including Zedekiah, they want to kill him, and so what happens is, instead of killing him, because they're a little careful about killing the prophets of God, they throw him down a cistern. And so in the midst of that cistern, he runs into this fella named Ebed. So let's pick up the story. But Ebed-Melech, a Cushite, Cushite probably means he's from either Egypt or he's from Ethiopia. He's from that neck of the woods, so northern Africa. But Ebed-Melech, a Cushite and an official in the royal palace, heard that they had put Jeremiah in the cistern. When the king was sitting in the Benjamin Gate, Ebed-Melech went out to the palace and said to him, so he's going to talk to the king, my lord the king, these men have acted wickedly in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet. They have thrown him into a cistern. Well, he will starve to death when there is no longer any bread in the city. Then the king commanded Ebed-Melech the Cushite, take 30 men from here with you and lift Jeremiah the prophet out of the cistern before he dies. So Ebed-Melech took the men with him and went to a room under the treasury in the palace. That's kind of odd. He took some old rags, worn out clothes from there, and let them down with the ropes to Jeremiah in the cistern. And Ebed-Melech the Cushite said to Jeremiah, put these old rags and worn out clothes under your arms to pad the ropes. Jeremiah did so. And they pulled him up with the ropes and lifted him out of the cistern. And Jeremiah remained in the courtyard of the guard. So he goes back to probably that little cage that he had been in before. This much of a story. I mean, he gets mentioned, his name gets mentioned, what, 3 or 4 times there. We'll see it 2 times in the next chapter. But here is this non-Israelite who's willing to go stand before the king and defend Jeremiah. And I think we can learn something important about this little guy. And I don't mean little guy because he was short or tall. I mean little as in the broad scope of the little people that have served God, of which most of us fit into that bill. The first thing we learn is there was a need for immediate action. Okay, sometimes there needs to be something done right now. Right now in the kingdom. Right now in the life of this church. Right now in what's going on in our world. That Ebed-Melech, he is willing to take a stand. That he has surveyed what's going on in the courtyard. And not only has he surveyed what's been going on in the courtyard, but now he's surveyed that Jeremiah, this prophet of God, who ought to be the one we're listening to, is now in the bottom of a cistern, and he is willing to go before the king, before the most powerful man in Jerusalem, who already doesn't like Jeremiah, to go before the king and try to take action. The truth is this is a pretty bold move. I mean, this is pretty gutsy for Ebed-Melech to say, here's what I'm going to take my stand on. Okay, one of the things I love about the people who go to this church is there are a number of you who have taken a stand. You've taken a stand in your job, and because of that, you didn't get to go up the ladder as far as you probably deserved. Or you've taken a stand in your job, and maybe you've lost your job because of it. Or you've taken a stand in your neighborhood, or you've taken a stand with your family, or you've made a point to say, okay, here's what God says, and here's what's going on around me, and I can't tie myself to that. I've got to tie myself to God. And in doing that, maybe it cost you something. Maybe it even got you into a little bit of trouble. Okay, I used to love going to Sam's to get gasoline. Now, I don't know if Sam's gasoline is any better than anybody else's gasoline, but I liked going to Sam's to get gasoline for the same reason some of you did. Remember why? You had that little guy, who, and I don't even know his name, and he wasn't little, he was taller than me, but you had that guy who would come up and say, is there anything I can pray for you about? And I just remember every time I'd go fill up with gas, he would come, and sometimes I'd say, no, life is pretty good, and sometimes I'd mention one of you guys, and sometimes I'd say, well, what can I pray about over you? And eventually he lost his job working at Sam's because he kept asking people if he could pray for him. He was willing to take a step that he thought God was leading him to, and it cost him, and it got him into a little bit of trouble. Ebed-Melech is the same way. The second thing that I think he does that is important to us is he shows great compassion. You know, when I think of compassion, I think of two passages. One that Greg read a few minutes ago, and we'll see a verse in that here in a second. But the other story I think of is the story of the Good Samaritan. You remember how it goes, right? Guy's on the road, and he gets held up and mugged, basically, and he's get tossed to the side, and he's left 3/4 dead, and the priest and the Levite, they both walk by. They see what's gone on there, and Jesus tells the story. They just keep right on walking, and then you get the Samaritan who sees what's going on, grabs the guy, puts him on his donkey, takes him into town, gets his wounds all fixed up, puts him up for a few nights, and says, whatever else you need, you got when I'm back into town next time. And Jesus' question at the end of that is, who is the one who showed compassion? We all know the answer to that. It wasn't the priest. It wasn't the Levite. Or to maybe put that in terms that we would get here, it wasn't the elder or the minister. It was just a regular old Joe who most people didn't even like in the first place. That he's the one who's willing to show compassion to the one who needs it. See, the Samaritan was willing to show compassion to the guy he found in the ditch. Ebed-Melech is willing to show compassion to the guy he finds in the cistern. My guess is we run into people in the ditch. And my guess is we run into people who maybe are stuck in the cistern. And sometimes, not sometimes, I think what God calls his people to do is to have this same spirit of compassion, this same willingness to help out. In the very first verse that Greg read was from 2 Corinthians chapter 1, and it reads like this: who comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. Okay, here's what I think that means in the midst of the story of Ebed-Melech. If you've been in the ditch, then who better to help somebody else out of the ditch than you? That there's something about being in this little journey called life, and we have those moments when life is hard, and we have those moments when we get off course and someone's got to come and rescue us. And if people have done that to us and brought us that comfort, then we do that to each other because of what's been done to us. And I think that's a powerful story that Jesus tells and a powerful story that Jeremiah refers back to. I have no idea what the relationship between Jeremiah and Ebed-Melech is. I don't know how they meet. I don't know if they're friends. I don't know if they've talked back and forth for 20 years. My assumption is Ebed-Melech kind of works there in the courtyard as almost an ambassador to Northern Africa, and he sees all of this stuff going on, and he feels the pain for Jeremiah, and he's willing to go stand before a king. Sometimes life happens, and when life happens, we get the privilege, and I really mean that word on purpose, we get the privilege of joining with them in their pain. We get that honor of, in the midst of their heartache and in the midst of their brokenness, to be the one that figuratively gets the clothes from the downstairs room, ties them to the bottom of the rope, and lowers the rope to rescue. I want you to think about who you can do that to. But what I'd like us to do is I want to expand that more than just out of our audience here. Okay, I've probably said this 100 times. One of the things I love about this church as much as anything else is if somebody ever has a need, we fix it. I mean, if someone needs food, we get them food. If someone needs their gas bill paid, we get their gas bill paid. If someone needs water pushed out of their house because of floods, we get water pushed out of their house. If someone needs a place to stay because of a fire, we put them up in a house. We take care of our people. We're compassionate like Ebed-Melech is. But wouldn't it be good for that to go one step further? One more step out into a world that is in chaos, that is different than us. Okay, if Ebed-Melech is from North Africa and Jeremiah is from Jerusalem, those two are pretty different. And I'm guessing they're different from the color of their skin to how much money they've got. If he's an official from the court of some queen or king, he's probably doing all right, and Jeremiah is broke, busted, and in a cistern. But yet he's more than willing to help out. The third thing I find interesting about old Ebed-Melech is he's got some boldness. I mean, it takes a lot to go stand before a king and say, let me tell you what I think's going on and what you need to do about it. But he appeared unafraid. He appeared unafraid of King Zedekiah, and he goes right into the throne room and he says, you need to do something about old Jeremiah, because if you don't, he's going to die down there. And what's weird, then kind of the most ironic thing in the story, is Zedekiah listens. Okay, to my knowledge, the only time Zedekiah listens until the very end of his life is this one little glimpse when this guy from North Africa comes walking up and says, you got a guy in a cistern that your people have thrown down there, and when bread runs out of the city, he's going to be dead. You need to do something about it. And the king says, well, take a bunch of men and do it. Pretty bold. It takes a lot to walk into your boss's office and say, here's what's going on in this set of cubicles, and it's not right. It takes a lot when you're in the midst of a schoolroom and there's a bully picking on a smaller kid to step in and say, this isn't right, you need to stop. It takes a lot to make a stand in our world on those things that need to be boldly stood up against. And Ebed-Melech is willing to do that. The fourth thing about Ebed-Melech is he's willing to help when no one else would. So Jeremiah is the preacher on the island. So preachers tell this story of every preacher wants to have his church on an island because people can't go anywhere and they got nothing else to do and they can't find another church. Jeremiah is a preacher on an island, but nobody wants to listen. And yet Ebed-Melech is willing to help. Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to follow God, not ask the question, how will this affect me? But are you willing to follow God and do the right thing because it's the right thing? Okay, a story from this church, and I can't give you names, but a story from this church from about 10 years ago is something happened in an office that shouldn't happen in an office. And one of the people who goes to this church was higher up in that office and went into the next rung and the next rung after that and put a foot down and said, this stuff shouldn't happen. With no wrestling with how this is going to affect me. And it was the right thing to do. And it was the God thing to do. And it was doing it not from trying to live a self-protected life, because a self-protected life was would say, if I call them on the carpet for this, and if I call an apple, and an orange, and if I'm saying this is wrong and needs to be fixed, that's going to put my name out there, and that's going to get me who knows what. And that individual was willing to take that step boldly and trust that God would do the right thing. Which is the fifth thing in old Ebed's story. Ebed's going to trust in God, and eventually he gets rewarded for it. The reward doesn't come instantly, but it does come. And in those moments in our life where we've got to take that step of boldness out, there will be reward. And I'm not saying it's going to come in this life. I'm not saying it's going to come with a promotion. It's going to come with your bosses saying, you know what, that was the right thing. We should have done that. But it's going to come from the one who matters the most. Okay, there are a few things I like to hear in my life. One of the things I want to hear the most is, well done, my good and faithful servant. I want to hear God, not because I deserve it, and not because I've preached a million sermons, and not because I've done everything I've done, because I'm a mess, and I got sin, and I got trouble, and I deserve to go the other direction. But by God's grace and God's mercy, I'm going to stand before Him justified, and I can't wait to hear, well done, my good and faithful servant. Here's Ebed-Melech's reward. Let's go to the next chapter. Here's what we read in chapter 38. When Jeremiah had been confined in the courtyard of the guard, the word of the Lord came to him. Go tell Ebed-Melech the Cushite. Okay, I'm trying to imagine this scene, how he's going to do this. But go tell Ebed-Melech the Cushite, this is what the Lord God Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Okay, here's my brain envisioning this. I think he's got a cell that's maybe, I don't know, a third the size of this room. And he's walking back and forth, and my guess is you can see the gates and you can see the courtyard. My guess is Jeremiah goes to whatever's closest to that courtyard, and he says, hey, Ebed-Melech, come here. Here's what he's going to say. I'm about to fulfill my words against this city. So Babylon's going to come and wipe the floor of Jerusalem, unfortunately. So I'm about to fulfill my words against this city, words concerning disaster and not prosperity. At that time, they will be fulfilled before your eyes, but I will rescue you on that day, declares the Lord. You will not be given into the hands of those you fear. I will save you, and you will not fall by the sword, but you will escape with your life because you trust in me, declares the Lord. Final story we get on Ebed-Melech is you trusted in God. And because you trusted in God, what is about to come, I'm going to save you from about what's about to come. And I want to know that God's going to take care of me. And I want to know that if I trust in Him, that God is going to keep His promises in the midst of chaos, in the midst of all the stuff that life brings. And even if I don't figure that out on this side of life, I'm going to figure it out on the other side. But my guess is, a lot of us have already figured that out. A lot of us have already figured out how God keeps his promises. And how God says, I'm going to take care of you, and I'm going to provide for you, and I'm going to make things the way they should. So trust me. So two things come to me out of this text. The first is I need to trust God with every ounce of my being. And the second thing is I need to treat people like they're worth the investment. Ebed-Melech looks at Jeremiah and says, I'm going to treat him right because of the God that he serves. I love this line from a book that we don't teach from very often. I'm going to start teaching from it more. Paul says this in 1 Thessalonians. We urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle and disruptive. Notice everything else. Encourage the disheartened. Help the weak. Be patient with everybody. Encourage the disheartened. Help the weak. Be patient with everybody. We've been collecting stuff to send to Gail Wright, who's having a hard time. And what I love is when somebody brings something, they tell me the story behind it. Because they want to help somebody who's down. They want to help somebody who's struggling. They want to help somebody who's just having as rough of a time as you can. And to maybe for a moment remind them that they are worth it. So trust in God. And then let the people around you know that they're worth it. So we're going to sing another song. We call this an invitation song. It's a song for you to at least ponder some thoughts. If you need me, I'm there. If you need an elder, they will be at the doors as you're going out. If you need someone next to you, just ask whoever's next to you to pray with you. And I'm pretty sure they'll do it. And if you need us, let us know. But let's stand, let's sing. Wynn?